I'm Ethan. It's Friday, and this is the Friday show. The run-in is here. 10 games from glory and all that. Starting with a visit from Arteta's Arsenal. Joining me to look back, and more importantly, to look forward, I've got Lloyd George. Morning, George, or afternoon?
Good morning, Ethan. How are you getting on?
Yeah, very good, man. How are you?
Yeah, I'm all groovy. Nice long weekend with a absolutely massive football game in the middle of it. So, you know, nervous and excited for this weekend.
I was just about to ask you if you were nervous, and you've answered that. Lloyd, how are you?
I'm good, mate. Yeah, also got a bit of nerves, but I'm excited as well. I mean, this is literally crunch time of the season, isn't it now? And we've had the 2 week break, so I'm kind of ready.
It's money time. It's the best part of the season, definitely. If you're in the mix for the trophies that we're in the mix for, then depending on how nervous a disposition you have, this should be the most exciting and fun part of the season. But before we begin to marinate in the nerves and the excitement, we had a nice long 2 week international break. Lloyd, you went to one of the England games, didn't you?
Yeah, I went to the Brazil game, which was pretty shite, to be honest. I've sworn already, but I think that was symptomatic of the game. Southgate picked a few guys to kind of get a real chance with the Euros coming up. So Watkins and Gallagher, probably the main two. And they both absolutely stunk the gaff out. Yeah, England didn't play very well. I thought England were a lot better, though, against Belgium. But for some poor defending from Lewis Dunk, I think they should have won that game quite easily. Doku looked bright, though, which I think was interesting from our perspective going into this game. I think he's looked a bit better post that injury in recent weeks.
Mm.
But I think ultimately the headline to come out of the break is the injuries, isn't it? From us, it's not been a kind one.
No, I mean, I think, you know, missing both Walker and Stones on Sunday will be a little bit of a blow. But I also, you know, I think over the course of Pep's tenure, I think we've quietly managed whatever injuries have been thrown at us. I mean, obviously every season is different and, you know, your kind of squad makeup is different and which players are important in which part of the season tends to vary. But in the main, I can't really think of an injury that cost us something. Maybe centre-back? There was a season where... What was the season we didn't win it?
1920.
Laporte went down.
Yeah, maybe that one. But, you know, other than that, yeah, I don't...
We had Rodri and Fernandinho playing centre-back for quite a few games in that season, didn't we? Yeah, so... Definitely the centre-back injuries that season did us rotten.
Yeah. No, I think that's...
For me, though, Stones is the key one. He's the guy that gives you, and we've discussed this so many times over the last couple of years, he's the guy that gives you that flexibility to be able to play a couple of different ways within a game. And I think from an opposition manager point of view, I think it makes it much harder to know how to approach games, particularly at the Etihad, when you've got that kind of Swiss Army knife that Stones is, to be able to kind of push into playing a 3-2 or fall back and play it like a 4-2 in possession like we did last season. It's just a real shame that he's probably going to be missing.
Yeah, it is, but also there's not a lot we can do about it. Generally, I find myself pretty sanguine about injuries just because it's nothing you can do. It's part and parcel of football. You look at Liverpool's last kind of 6-8 weeks and the number of players that they've had out, the number of players that they've lost for long periods of time. I mean, you're talking about, you know, totemic players for them that have all been out at the same time. So I think you have to manage these things as best you can. I think it's not ideal with a game like Arsenal, but at the same time, I find myself going, well, it's at home. And I think that probably is a bigger factor than whether John Stones plays or not. So, but we'll see. We'll get to that. I feel like we're previewing Arsenal a little too early. George, did you catch England?
Yeah. I watched chunks of both the games. I missed maybe half an hour of the England-Belgium match because I was actually at the under-21s match, England under-21s versus Luxembourg on Tuesday, which was an interesting experience in itself, really. But they had the senior game on inside afterwards, so watched the second half there. And, you know, I was a lot more impressed with the Belgium performance, as Lloyd said, than the Brazil one. The Brazil one was very, very negative. You know, what people malign Southgate for, passing sideways and backwards constantly, possession for possession's sake, but with no kind of daggering movements and any kind of will to go forward. Whereas I think that improved in the Belgium one big time. I thought some of the players who've probably not played together before started to gel a lot better, and we started to see threats in the final third a bit more, which was a positive sign. And hopefully when the senior team gets all the players back, we'll have, you know, a really strong 11. But it's going to be interesting to see who he picks in that 11, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, I really enjoyed the Belgium game. I have to be honest. I think that Foden, Bellingham, the Rag, and Rice, I think that they combined well. I think I can't remember the last time I saw an England team that felt technical in the way that this team feels technical. Lloyd, is from a technique point and quality point of view, is this maybe the best England team of a generation?
I mean, it's definitely the best I've seen in my lifetime, technically. Are you not even able to name check Maynou by the right name? Is he the Rag now?
Don't embarrass me on this podcast, Lloyd. It's a City podcast. The name of the podcast is 9320. Like, you know, he's a Rag, but please carry on.
Yeah, I mean, look, I said a few weeks ago, I think he should start for England. I thought he was brilliant, to be honest, in the cameo against Brazil, and then against Belgium. I thought he kind of felt like the missing piece that helped knit the play together with those other three. You know, I think Foden, Bellingham, Rice are all pretty much world-class players, and it almost feels a bit trite having someone like Conor Gallagher next to them. I'm not saying Maynou's on the level of them, but he's just able to give those guys the ball, I think, in situations where they can really damage. And some of just the little kind of 1-2s between Phil and Maynou, they just seemed on the same wavelength. And getting Phil in those central positions, which we saw kind of second half as he kind of drifted inside, that's when England played their best football. I think the main thing I actually took away is that I think Bellingham starting in this 10 role, I think it's a bit of a nonsense. I think it indulges him too much for this England team. And I really think if Southgate was serious, the best route to winning the Euros would be to play Phil and Bellingham as the two kind of eights. I think he plays that role for Madrid more out of necessity because they don't have any kind of attackers really. And I think Bellingham, sometimes he kind of clogged up the balls that Phil should have been getting onto. And, you know, guys that I know that are big England fans and support Chelsea or Liverpool or whatever, they were all saying as well that they thought England's best football across the two games came when Phil was most prominent in those central positions.
Yeah, I mean, I don't, obviously Jude Bellingham is a top player, but I don't think that he was particularly amazing for England. I felt like he chewed the ball a lot. I felt like too much, you can't, I think when you've got the kind of balance of quality that England have, you can't be looking for one lad every time you get the ball. And it just felt a little bit too much like there was far too much deference to Bellingham, far too much deference. And I don't know, like there's something about him that I just don't like. It's quite irrational, I know, but he's got an attitude that just smells funky to me. So yeah. But yeah, like I think in terms of quality, that balance is really there. You certainly felt it. George, let me ask you a question. I'm being a bit cheeky here, right? But let's say that City were a really badly run club like Man United are, right? And City's midfield was an absolute mess like Man United's midfield is. And we had to field Rico Lewis every week in the centre of our midfield. Do you think Rico Lewis would be playing for England?
That's a very, very good question, Isan. And I think not. I think he may be playing for the under-21s, like Maynou was supposed to. But I think the fact that Mainoo does play for United, probably the most well-supported club in the country, unfortunately, and, you know, the most supported English club maybe in the world, is a massive factor. All you need is a couple of good performances and then you're thrust well and truly into the limelight. And that's not me saying that I don't think Mainoo's a good footballer. I do. I think he's really talented, and I think he offers England something which maybe we had been lacking to a degree, in the fact that he can drop deep and in the positions where Rice usually occupies and take the ball on the half turn, and we can spin out and we can be open, whereas Rice technically isn't good enough to... He doesn't have the feet to, in tight spaces, man-marked, to have the ball passed to him, turn out and spread it very quickly. So I think that element of Mainoo's game is quality, but I think people need to chill out on him a little bit, because not purely because I don't want to praise a United footballer, more for his own personal development, because I think it's quite that you can't put everybody's hopes and dreams on one young player. We've seen it before, how it affects some people, and if he goes into the Euros, plays well for a few games, be getting loads of praise, but then if he gets churned over by Camavinga on the break against France in the quarterfinals and France score, he's going to be getting grief from all sides. So Southgate has a duty, I think, to protect him and not just do what Ten Hag's doing and just playing him at every single game, because they've got no other options. I think he should be used, but should be used in the right moments.
I don't think he will. I think a little bit part of the problem is the hype. I think the kind of hype reached a crescendo after the game the other night, where it sort of feels like, you know, when everybody's saying, oh, he absolutely has to start, he's in England's best 11. I don't think Southgate's going to go against that. So I think for better or for worse, he's going to have that pressure put on his shoulders. And I think he will make a mistake. I think the reality is, and I think it's something that, it's why I'm really uncomfortable with the hype, and it's why I'm really, you know, I'll put aside the fact that he's a rag. One of the major issues I've got with the hype is young players, their progress is never linear, right? They'll have ups and they'll have downs. I think Rico Lewis is a great example of a player who came into City's first team and we all went, wow. Yeah. But it's natural that you will have a dip after that. And I think that, to go back to my initial question to you about Lewis and Mainoo, I don't see him doing anything that Lewis doesn't do and can't do. And I've found the whole thing about how he's gone from not even done the under 21s, gone straight into the England starting 11 when Lewis was in a previous England squad, I find it really uncomfortable. And I think Southgate is somebody who he's somebody who's always talked about the idea of the under 21s being the pathway, and that you kind of got to earn your stripes to get into the England team.
Yeah, yeah.
And it just, that hasn't been the case with Mainoo. And I just find that very odd. And I think it does just come down to the fact that he's a rag and he plays for United. I think that, you know, outside of the rags and the scousers, if he played for anybody else, he's not in that England squad ahead of somebody like Rico Lewis. So, yeah, I mean...
I think there's one thing that's kind of been left out of the discussion here, though, which is that I think Rico really suffers from the fact that no one knows what his best position is. So in his debut for England, he started at left back when he got man of the match. He was included in the squad this time as a defender. And I do think the thing that Mainoo is benefiting from really well is that he has a very clearly defined position and he's played there consistently for United. And it also happens to be the big hole in the England team at the moment. So I do think that's a factor. Rico has struggled from the fact that I couldn't tell you now where I think Rico's best position is.
I don't really agree with that. I think for me, he's a midfielder. I think that's super clear for me. I think that the question at City has, for me, generally been about physicality and about athleticism. But I think the same more or less will apply to Mainoo. I think he's maybe a little bit more athletic than Rico, but then I think Rico's a little bit more agile. I think that Rico has got a little bit better balance. I think that in tight spaces, he's as good as Manu is. So, yeah. I mean, look, is what it is. He will go to the Euros and he will start the first game. But I think for all the talk of him being the missing link, I think we should be careful that we don't end up putting an expectation on him that the flip side of it becomes, like George says, gets robbed of the ball in a bad position. And I've seen him lose the ball in bad positions for United. He's not the perfect footballer, not by any stretch of the imagination. And I think at international level, you lose the ball in a bad position, you're probably going to give a goal up. It's a bit like Champions League in that sense. So I think we should definitely try and temper expectation, even if there is the kind of, you can see technically why he fits really well with Foden, with Bellingham and with Rice.
I think that's very fair, yeah.
Right. Last thing, just on the injury thing, because there's a lot of conversation this week about, you know, should Southgate have played Stones twice? Should Stones have played? Should he have said something? Should the players have just said, I've got a niggle and not gone to the international, to the not gone and played in the friendlies? Lloyd, where do you stand on sort of all of that sort of stuff?
Yes. See, this is a tricky one, and I think it kind of goes to, for me, what I remember growing up, which was the Ferguson effect in these kind of March internationals, where and Neville has actually spoken about it the other week on his podcast about basically telling lads, you know, you're pulling out of this. Now, I think those days have changed a little bit. I think part of that was down to the antipathy around England at the time, and I don't think the players were as comfortable in the environment as they are now. I think there's, you know, even Southgate aside, there's a very different feel around the England team, which is a good thing. I think the players are really invested in going to play for their national teams, like a lot of, you know, foreign players are, and we see that. I do think it's fair to say, though, that Stones probably, when it came round to the second game, maybe should have taken a little bit of, I guess, accountability in saying, oh, actually, you know, I feel my groin or my hammy's a little bit tight. Maybe, you know, maybe I should sit this one out. I think for Southgate to play him, though, is obviously ridiculous. And it's not just ridiculous from a City perspective. It's ridiculous from an England perspective because he's by far and away England's best defender. I think he's probably the third most important player for England this summer in terms of if they went down. And now he's left in a situation where Lewis Dunk's dropped an absolute howler against Belgium. Maguire's got injured and he's not been great. And you're really struggling then. You know, Mark Gay's got a bad injury. Without Stones, I mean, the England team looks really poor, I think, defensively. So it's a mess. I do think it's fair to say maybe Stones should have kind of nudged it, but it's equally a difficult position to be in. But he's a senior player, so I think he has that ability to kind of make that call and put that back on the team and Southgate.
George, what about for you?
It's a really tricky one. I mean, I think the even though England haven't tasted success in terms of trophies in the last few years, I think the fact that we've been going far in tournaments is down to the buy-in from all the players that they do take it seriously, kind of like a lot of the other big footballing nations do. You know, your Brazils, France, Portugal, Spain, Argentina, you know, all those nations, the players, even the best players who are playing Champions League football and are the main men for their teams, they always, you know, answer the call, as it were, for their nations and turn up and deliver. I think the responsibility and the injuries lies with Southgate. The fact these are two friendlies, so there's nothing on the line in terms of qualification, Nations League, anything like that. And you're not, I think he should have experimented more with the team. We should have seen Jarrod Branthwaite playing in one of those two matches. You know, he's England's most exciting young centre-back prospect, and you've got two games there which he could have took part in as he's only got league games left with Everton, whereas, you know, he Southgate knows Stones has got the Champions League, the FA Cup, a title running. And so in my head, I don't think I can look at John Stones and go, oh, you should be saying that you essentially don't want to play for your country because you don't want to risk an injury. Southgate should have the wherewithal to go, you know what, let's see what Jarrod Branthwaite looks like, because he could be the future of that position. Whereas Lewis Dunk at 32, he's not going to be the future of England for the next few tournaments. So for me, it lies with Southgate, and that's where my frustration is, to be honest. I can't ever judge a player for not pulling out of their country.
Yeah. I guess I fall somewhere in the middle. I just feel as though with the intensity of the run-in as it's going to be, and I'm talking very specifically about Stones here, like, I think from Stones' point of view, having played the first game, I think he should have been saying to Southgate, I don't want to start this game. We've got Arsenal this weekend. And, you know, I mean, it's not like John Stones is fighting for his England position. Everybody knows that Stones is England's best defender and most important defender. So you don't need to play him. And honestly, I can't begin to express how much I can't stand Gareth Southgate. And I don't know if you have either of you seen what Southgate said about Branthwaite after the game.
No, I haven't actually.
So I saw a quote where basically he said something like, oh, yeah, he had a good, because he was on loan at PSV last season, right?
Yeah.
So he's like, Southgate says something like, oh, yeah, like he had a good loan spell at PSV. But if you'd have asked me last summer whether I thought, or something, basically, he was like, if you'd have asked me like a year ago, there's no way that Branthwaite would be in the reckoning for the first team. And it just struck me as like, hang on, you've just damned him with horrible faint praise there. You've basically just gone, oh, well, he wasn't that good 8 months ago, and now suddenly he's dead good. It's like, that's not the case. He obviously must have had talent a year ago for him to be putting the performances in that he's putting in now. I just, every time Southgate opens his mouth up, I just want him to close it, I guess.
Yeah. It's very strange as well, because it's very contradictory of what he's done with Maynou. A year ago, nobody in the country would have said Maynou was going to start for England at the Euros. So therefore, you can't then come out and say, use it as an excuse not to play a player as he wasn't in the reckoning a year ago. It's like, well, of course not. But football's a fast-moving business. Things change. So you've got to use what's available to you.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, the other thing with Branthwaite as well is to build on, I can't remember which of you said it before about the under-21s, but the guy started in the under-21 winning Euros team last year when he was at PSV. Yeah. So he's got that pedigree from the younger team as well.
Yeah, I think it was really strange that he decided to play Stones again, that he didn't play Branthwaite. But anyway, there's not a lot that we can do about that now. Right, let's move on. So this week, me and Lloyd did a market podcast on the 93/20 player, which, for those of you who don't know, is basically like a podcast where we talk about the transfer market and City. And so I think it was a deep dive, and we had a lot of interesting conversations, and I thought it might be cool to bring a couple of them over to the Friday show. So, George, I'm going to start with you and have a little chat about what you think City need to do this summer. What do you think, well, for you, what would be the priority positions that you feel City need to strengthen in this summer?
Yeah, the market pod this week was terrific, lads. So yeah, congrats on that. And there were some big swings in there, which I liked as well, some big calls. And a lot of what you were speaking about was, you know, quite, you know, looking internally at City and speaking about the current cohort as well, which I thought was quite interesting, and who kind of needs to go in order for people to come in. So I think the priority for me this summer is sorting out the Bernardo situation, as you guys kind of alluded to a lot in the pod. He's such a big piece of the puzzle for Guardiola, and he's, you know, probably one of his most trusted lieutenants, maybe after Rodri, I guess, and is used to plug so many holes. So I think if he's going, which, you know, could happen if the club comes in the right offer, I think he needs to be replaced with, you know, a creative midfielder in the guise of something like a Gundo, really. a true eight. And I think that's the area of the pitch, you know, which I feel that we've maybe lacked sometimes this season. And there's been a big hole with Gundo leaving, and Bernardo's filled in there sometimes, but then he's playing quite deep and then he's out on the wing, and it's not structured enough. And I think the number eight for me is kind of the real piece of the puzzle that I would like us to invest in.
Any player in particular?
It's tough. If I was going to say somebody maybe slightly more attacking, but I think could play deeper as well, is Musiala, but I don't know how probable or possible that is. Although there was an interesting quote from the hierarchy at Bayern, which I found, and one of the lines was, he is supposed to be the future of Bayern, which is supposed to be. It's quite a strong few words, I think, there, which I think there may be some alarm bells at Bayern that he does want to leave. I think if they were very confident, they would just say he is the future of Bayern. So I think there must have been some kind of chatter or clamour from Musiala's camp that, you know, maybe he doesn't want to sign a new contract and all these kind of things. So I think there's a chance. I don't know if it would be this year, maybe it would be next. But Musiala for me would be a really special signing for City. But if that's impossible, I would think kind of what Lloyd said on the market, I'll agree with him. Paquetá, I think he's a special, special player. And I think he's been playing with a chip on his shoulder this season about he's angry about the betting thing and kind of prove how top quality he is, then it's working because he's been sensational. And I thought he looked great for Brazil, and he's been by far and away West Ham's best player this year.
Yeah, I've slowly fallen in love with him over the course of the season. I think he's kind of, for me, if the betting thing is cleared, I'd put him at the top of the list of players to strengthen the squad this summer. I think if you only sign in one player this summer, it's got to be Paquetá. Lloyd, you want to jump in here? What's your vibe on Lucas? And just, I guess we're all in agreement that centre mid is the priority.
100%, yeah. Absolutely the position where I feel like we've lacked quality this season. And that's because, and I think that's borne out by Pep selections. So we've seen a lot of Alvarez there. We've not seen a lot of the two guys that we signed in that position in Kovacic and Nunes. And we've definitely missed Gundogan, I think, in some of the bigger, more kind of difficult games in possession and also out of possession. And I think it's kind of reflected in our record in the big games this season against the top six. We've conceded quite a lot of goals. We've scored a decent amount, but I just think we've missed that ability that Gundo gives you to not just control a game, but kind of apply that creativity that he was obviously so good at in kind of tight spaces. So I am 100% on board. I think for me right now, Paquetá sits number one on the list. I think he's the perfect replacement for Bernardo because I think he gives you a lot of what Bernardo gives you, but equally he can play a little bit deeper. He can possibly play on that right wing role like Bernardo has. I just really hope the betting situation is resolved because I've kind of a bit like you, I think, kind of fallen in love with that player.
I think if he's not available, have you got, both of you, very quickly, have you got a backup? Look at what happened last summer with Bellingham and with Rice, right? I think that you can go into a window with the best laid plans, but I think you've got to be cognizant of the fact that you might have to pivot because for whatever reason you can't get the lad that you want. So do either of you have close to Paquetá shout?
Mine would be Musiala, I think. So the news this morning about Alonso staying, I think that completely rules out the chance of signing Florian Wirtz this summer. So I'd just draw a red line through that. I'd really go and test Bayern's resolve and Musiala's resolve, given that he's got the contract of running out in 2026. Different player to Paquetá, I think someone that plays a bit higher up the pitch and could be a bit of a concern, maybe that he occupies the same spaces as Phil and KDB. But I think when, like we discussed, Aysan, on the market, City need to just go and sign top players and then worry about it afterwards. And I think Musiala is of the level where, even though profile-wise, maybe he doesn't replace Bernardo and Gundo as well as we need, he's an absolutely top player and someone that would improve us instantly and walk into starting 11 conversations, which, you know, if we're being brutally honest, Kovacic and Nunes just haven't.
Yeah, I completely agree. I guess for me, the name would be, if he can't get Paqueta, I'd go and get Bruno from Newcastle. I think he's got a release clause as well.
Fair shot.
I would do that just because I feel as though I don't want to get into the realms of a project, and I don't want to get into the realms of like safe and sensible. Like Kovacic in a way was safe and sensible. We don't need that. We need absolutely no question best 11 footballer. And for me, Bruno and Paqueta are the two that I look at that ideally tick the positional, the footballing profile that I think we desperately lack. I think both of them tick those boxes. So Bruno's the one for me.
They might have to do that as well, mightn't they, with what's happening financially for them this season.
I think they've probably got to sell either him or Isak. And I think even though they love Bruno, I think they'd probably be more inclined to sell him because I think strikers like Isak are much harder to come across than centre midfielders at the moment. I think there's a plethora of quality centre mids that they could get, maybe at a much cheaper price point as well if they do the scouting right. But I think trying to replace the profile of somebody like Isak would be nigh on impossible.
You know what we could do? We could give them Calvin Phillips in part exchange.
I thought Lloyd said, what's that knocking off the price? I thought Lloyd said we were swapping him for a pack of digestives the other day. So.
Yeah, we might get a fiver knocked off. The overall fee. Right. Okay. So what do you want to talk about? Because either we can chat about Oscar Bob, or with the news that Alonso is staying at Leverkusen, we can have a little look at the European managerial situation. I'm pretty easy. George, you can decide.
Oosh, big pressure. Big pressure. I think we can have a little word on Bob, and then we could move on to the managerial thing as well. Just a quick overall, you get to start.
Okay. How good is Bob?
Terrific. I think he's had a great season. Although I think we've maybe been a bit frustrated in the last couple of months with not seeing him as much as we would like. I think his stocks have risen with the team, with his teammates. I think Guardiola's trust in him has risen this season. And I think we will see a bit more of him now in the Premier League matches in the running. I just think with the fixture build up, I think it's impossible for him not to really get some game time. Bearing in mind, this week alone, we've got Sunday, Arsenal at home. Then we've got Villa coming on Wednesday, which are going to be two intense, very physical games. So you will need to rotate slightly. So I think we'll see a bit more of him. And I think, as you guys spoke about a bit on the market pod as well, I think maybe he is suffering from his versatility a bit as well. Lloyd made the point earlier about Mainoo plays in a position because that's the position he plays, and there's no questions about if he could do a job on the left or the right or a bit deeper or false nine or any of this kind of stuff. And I think it would maybe help his progression to have a clear picture, whether that for now is coming off the right and then drifting in centrally with the fullback pushing on, or if it is starting centrally. I think that would be really great for him, but I think that won't come this year. I think it will come next year.
Lloyd, do you think that the Palmer's success at Chelsea will help Bob in terms of pathway at City?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think ultimately the way City run things is when they made that decision to sell Cole Palmer for 45 mil, they ultimately would have just said, we're comfortable with what happens from here. You know, that's a great fee. We obviously think he's really good, but equally it's probably right for him to go. So the fact that Palmer's been super successful, I don't think will have changed City's opinion too much on how to run it. I think it's just more, Pep and the kind of coaching staff have got to provide that pathway that you said to allow someone to have the minutes to develop. And I think with Bernardo likely going this summer, I think the path is kind of it's kind of laid out, I think, particularly given that Mara has gone. And in Doku, we've signed someone that's primarily played from the other side.
Mm.
So I think for me, the next 12 or 15 months, so the end of this season and the beginning of next, I think the position that Bob's going to get the most opportunities in is going to be the right wing. And he's got to establish himself there. And if he can do that, then he can look to play a bit more inside, like Phil has obviously done.
Do you think that he needs a position? So I was quite critical of the way that Guardiola moved Phil around. To a lesser extent, but I had a similar vibe with Palmer in that I felt as though Palmer got to play in every position except for the position that he'd excelled in the under-21s, and I found that incredibly frustrating. Do you think with Bob they need to make a call on what his position is?
Well, I think the brutal truth is that when Bob has been played out of position this season, so played left wing against Newcastle, scored the crucial goal, played left wing against Spurs away in the Cup, I think he's done better this season than Palmer did last season when he was shunted around. And I think that's to Bob's credit, really. It is frustrating that Pep didn't give Palmer a kind of his minutes in his best position last season. But like I say, I think the reality is that Bob's done better in more difficult circumstances than Palmer did. And I think that'll stand him in good stead. He's also because he is more versatile than Palmer, I think he's able to play on that left and kind of drift in a little bit like Phil does when we've seen it. But yeah, I mean, obviously the best chance of success for him is to be able to play that position, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 times in a row and get that repeatability. And I think that looking at the squad, that is going to be right wing.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I completely agree. I know it's big shout, but, and don't get me wrong, I love Cole Palmer. Everybody that's seen my timeline has seen how happy I am for him that he's doing so well at Chelsea. And I'm not just saying this. I think Oscar Bob's a better player. I think in the medium term, Bob is going to be a talent at a slightly higher level. He's got, I don't know, like it's quite scary, some of the stuff that he can do already with a football at his feet. I think even that Newcastle goal, it's like you can't underestimate just.
Oh, that's so difficult.
It's just
difficult.
Like, yeah. Doing that in the under-21s, right? You're like, oh my God. But then to go and do it in injury time in a game that you feel you've got to win, that you've been thrown on and told, go on then, go and win the game. And for you to be able to have the composure to do that, he's got something about him that, you know, like David Silva, you felt like the pitch would freeze when David Silva got the ball at his feet. It's like everything slowed down for Silva. Bob has got a little bit of that about him that, you know, even again, watching him play for Norway, he's brilliant and he demands the ball, and the way that he drifts off the right into the middle, he's like a Silva Sane hybrid, which is just mad levels of expectation to put on him. But I think he's that good. Okay, so do we chat Arsenal or let's have a little chat about Xabi Alonso? Either of you surprised that he's decided to stay at Leverkusen?
I'm not. You go, George. You go.
I'm sorry. I'm not surprised in one way, because I think he seems like a very fairly principled person. And I think if he does go on to win the league and get them into the Champions League, it would be a real shame for him then not to manage that team in the Champions League the following season and see how he can fare. And I think if you can beat Bayern Munich to the title in one season, you know, you'll get a lot of praise and there'll be a lot of clamour around you. But if you can go and do it again, his stocks will be so high that he'd have his pick of anything he wants after that. I think he already does have if he'd gone this season, he would have had a good selection of clubs as well. But I think his stocks would be so high after 2 years, and it would really stake his claim as one of the best coaches around. So on that point, I'm not too surprised. But when there was two clubs that he had played for and been successful at, after him, two clubs that, you know, would have guarantee him the Champions League football, give him access to a lot of top quality players, finances. It is surprising that he's chosen to, you know, go the with the slightly less glamorous path, but I respect it. And it's going to be really, really interesting to see what happens after next season, because obviously that's when Ancelotti's contract's up and the Real Madrid job may be up for grabs, which maybe that's, he's playing the long game for that one. I'm not too sure.
Lloyd, where do you think Liverpool go next?
Yeah, I think they're a bit fucked now, which is fan-fucking-tastic news. Sorry, double swear. When I saw that last night, I was like, it wasn't a fist pump under the table, but it wasn't far off. I mean, I think from him, the step down for Liverpool is quite large. You know, Alonso he's not a kind of surefire thing, but he's obviously the closest to it on the market. I think they're chirps in Ruben Amorim now, aren't they? But that's got risk attached to it. You know, a lad I know who's properly into Portuguese football said, yeah, obviously done a really good job with Sporting, but it's had a couple of seasons where they've been a little bit dodgy against not great sides. And so he's not kind of flat-tracked the league, maybe in the sense that Liverpool fans would tell you across the last 3 years. So, brilliant news. I think from Alonso, though, it's the smart play. You don't want to go and replace Klopp. I think that's high risk. He's going to get another season with that Leverkusen team, which is a brilliant team. He's going to get to play in the Champions League. They're probably going to win the league this season. Best opportunity for him to develop. I think if he was going to leave, the Bayern job was in my eyes, the easier and probably the better move. But to stay and stick with that team and try and keep it together, I think that's the best move from his perspective. So I think he's made the right call.
Yeah, I agree. I was really surprised when in the aftermath of Klopp announcing that he was going, I was surprised at how many people felt that it was just definite that Alonso would take that job, just because he doesn't strike me as a fella who's in a rush to do anything. And this is his first full season there, unless I'm mistaken. And he's about to win the Bundesliga. To me, it just seemed quite mad that he would, after one season, leave to go anywhere. Like, to go to Bayern would have been weird, because it's like, why would you go to the team that you've just bested to the league? And same with, like, Liverpool. It's like, the following Klopp, the expectation, the noise. Like, if you've been at Leverkusen for 3 years and you cut your teeth there and you feel like, okay, I've done my bit here, I'm ready, that's different. But it just felt, the whole thing felt very premature to me. So I'm not hugely surprised that the announcement has come. I actually think I think it's going to be a really interesting summer. I think with Bayern and Barcelona potentially looking for managers, Liverpool looking for a manager, I think United will end up in a position where they let Ten Hag go, because I don't think they'll get Champions League football, and I think that'll be enough for their owners as well. I think there's a lot of uncertainty out there in the managerial market. I wouldn't want to bet money. Like, so for example, I think one of the things that struck me, and I guess it's an English-centric thing, is the idea that, well, if Liverpool ring you, then you just take the job. And it's like, I don't think it's like that for these young top coaches. Like, I think even for Amorim, like, he might go, well, you know what? If I go to Liverpool and I go to England, I might not win anything for 4 years. If I go to Bayern, I'm basically walking into a club that is built to dominate the league for years to come. I think the allure of Barcelona could be bigger than the pull of Liverpool. So I think there's a lot of uncertainty, I think, for all of these clubs in terms of where they land next. And there isn't any real outstanding candidate. So yeah, I mean, I think in a funny way, the appointment after Alonso that I'd be most fearful of for Liverpool, and I'd like to know what you both think before we move on. For me, it was the idea that they get De Zerbi, because I do think De Zerbi is that good. I think you give him the quality of players that Liverpool have got, I think that could be somewhere else. Lloyd, yeah. Have you got anybody? Lloyd, you got anyone who you think who you wouldn't want to take that job after Alonso?
The Liverpool job?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I was in the WhatsApp groups I'm in with Scousers last night. I was like, surely the next move's De Zerbi. But they were all like, no. They were like, he's got too much of a propensity to get slapped. And they were all back in Amorim, which I found a bit confusing. For me, I'd go De Zerbi. I know that his teams, not just Brighton, but Sassuolo, have had that ability to get, you know, beaten 3-4-0, and that is concerning. The level of players, and particularly defenders, you're going to be operating with is going to go up. And I've always just had a feeling that De Zerbi could be one of the next big coaches. I feel like there's something there. The way that the players talk about him, I think they've got such a clearly defined style of play, to the point where Pep definitely has nicked certain things off Brighton over the last couple of seasons. De Zerbi would be the choice for me, but the Scousers didn't seem keen on him.
No, I think he's too... I think Scousers are weird like that, do you know what I mean? I think that they've prided themselves so much on not being like City that I think De Zerbi is a bit too Pep for them. I think they want a little bit more of a Klopp type of coach. I don't really know what that means, actually, but I think just stylistically, De Zerbi's football is a little too Pep for them. Because a lot of the Scousers I know are all a bit like, I don't really know about De Zerbi. And I'm kind of looking at it going, you know what? If you appoint Amorim or Nagelsmann or anybody else who hasn't done it in the Prem, I will be absolutely buzzing. And if they get De Zerbi, I'd be worried. George?
Yeah, I think there will be people in the Scouse ranks who want to stick with the, what do they call it, heavy metal football or whatever they keep going on about with Klopp. Yeah. And so, but the caliber of manager that they're after, I don't know if it's currently out there. And as you said, I don't know how attractive the prospect of going to Liverpool is on the basis that you have to follow Klopp and all of what he's done and all that he's meant to the fan base and connected with that fan base. It's a poison chalice to a degree. It's kind of like when, you know, Emery's a great manager, but when he took over at Arsenal after Wenger, he was always a bit doomed. And then, well, Moyes taken over after Fergie, that was just funny, but he was still doomed regardless of how good he could have been. So who ought to be most fearful of them getting? I don't think he would, because I don't think he'd ever come to England, especially the north of England. But Zidane, he's been out of the managerial game for a while, but he's still an attractive prospect to a lot of clubs. You know, the Champions League he won at Real with, you know, albeit a fantastic squad, but he does have that pedigree and he does play quite dynamically, which might be attractive to Liverpool after what Klopp's done. It'd be interesting to see. I couldn't tell you which way it would go with Zidane. I feel like it would either implode or he'd be spectacular, but it'd be probably the most intriguing one for me. But I can't see them going for a De Zerbi or a Xavi or a Nagelsmann, because like you say, I think they want to kind of follow a similar DNA to what Klopp's been playing with.
I think the only other coach out there that I think if they appointed him, I'd be a bit like, oh, I don't like that, is Simeone, just because I think,
yeah,
you know, that sort of abrasive football at Anfield. I mean, I'm not sure. Actually, I think their supporters probably would have it. They certainly idolised Rafa Benitez, and he was hardly the most progressive coach on the planet. So,
yeah, they only care they care about winning, don't they? I think if Liverpool fans wouldn't care how defensively or shithousery they played, as long as they were still classed as one of the big dogs in the league, I think they'd happily accept Simeone if he was playing well.
Yeah, no, I think that's a fair shout. Right. We put it off for long enough. It's time to talk about the run-in and Arsenal. Lloyd, going to start with you. And a very simple question. There's 10 games left, so there's 30 points to play for. How many points do you think a team needs to win the league from the remaining 30?
Whoa. Now that is literally the golden question. I think, so what? Arsenal, Liverpool are on 64, City are on 63. So there's 30 available points left. I think you probably need to get, I would imagine, I think 89 to win the league, maybe 90. So you're going to need to take, you can only drop about 4 to 5 points from here?
So if I offered you 27 from the remaining 30 points, you'd take them?
Yeah, I'd snap your hand off for that.
Okay. George, what about for you? Where are you landing on the points that we'll need or could be needed?
Yeah, I was thinking around 90 points would win the league this year, and that would mean we can afford to lose one match. But now, the more I think about it, I cannot see Liverpool losing. I can see them drawing a game, but I can't see, especially, they're not going to lose at Anfield in the league for the rest of the season. That's a given, I think. And their away games, you've got some tricky ones, so, but then that would mean we'd need 29, which would be 92. So I think, yeah, I think we can drop points in one game, but I think we'll only be able to tell at the end of the season if that is a loss or a draw. I think it's going to be so tight.
Yeah, it's tricky. So I have a theory, right? And my theory is that the team that is the most perfect in the next five games wins the league. And I think that anybody, I think that the way the psychology is going to play, I think that everybody is going to be fearful for the next five games about dropping points, and everybody's going to be looking at it going, we can't drop for the next five. And I think anybody who does, their arse will go. So I think if Arsenal lose to City on Sunday, I think their arse goes. I think they drop more points in the next five games if that happens. I think similarly for Liverpool, I think that, let's say, for example, that Brighton somehow eke out a draw, I think that's an utter disaster for them, because I think that from a mentality point of view, they're going to feel like we fucked here. And I think then everybody's going to be really mindful for these next five games. And so I think that whoever's the most perfect in the next five wins it, regardless of the difficulty of the fixtures in the last five, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think the psychology, especially from this game on Sunday, with whoever wins, say if Arsenal won, that would really boost them into the next few games and in their Champions League games, I think. But with how emotional they are, yeah, they could crumble with a loss. And similarly, if Liverpool somehow did drop a few points, and Anfield would implode with the amount of emotion and tension given its Klopp's last season. So yeah, I would agree that these next five games, I think if somebody goes 15 points, it would be a big, big statement.
Yeah. Yeah.
So much rests on this. I think so much rests on this City-Arsenal game. And I think for Liverpool as well, to be honest. I think anything other than a City win, even if Arsenal win, I still think Liverpool are probably favourites. Obviously, a draw is the perfect result for them. But the thing that they will least want is City to win.
Yeah, definitely.
I think what's interesting is if you actually dip into what sensible Liverpool supporters are saying or what sensible Arsenal supporters are saying, I think funnily enough, nobody feels as though City-Arsenal on Sunday will define the title race. Everybody is of the opinion that there isn't obviously for Arsenal, the perfect result is if they win. For City, the perfect result is if we win. But from the Liverpool point of view, there isn't really a perfect result for them. So I think what's going to play into this is mentality more than anything else. I know that, like, you know, we can look at injuries and we can look at form and we can say, yeah, but they're doing really well right now. Or we can talk about the Champions League and the Europa League and say, yeah, but Champions League games are going to make it harder. I think it's going to come down to nerve. I genuinely do. I think it's going to come down to nerve and know-how. I think the reality is, how do any of these teams handle not winning a game they're meant to be winning with 10 minutes to go? How do you handle that 10-minute period and what happens? And I think that will more or less define where this title lands. Because I think one of the things that I find it really hard to believe that anybody can get 30 out of the last 10 games. Yeah, I don't think that's happening. And I think that realistically, if you would give me 27 points now, I'd say City would be champions without question. If you give me 27 out of the last 30 points, City, you've won the league. And so for me, that's my benchmark right now, is we can drop 3 points between now and the end of the season. Well, that's it. And that 3 points, for me, it means,
Well, it absolutely can't be on Sunday.
No, I mean, I think
mentality-wise, if we were to lose against Arsenal, There's no way I could see us winning the next nine on the bounce. So
really, I mean, I don't view it like that because I think you're being a bit disrespectful to the mentality of the squad. I would never write them off ever under any circumstances. So there's no way that I'd concede the title if Arsenal beat us. And there's no way that I'd say, well, we can't win the next nine. Of course we fucking can. I think actually the thing that would make it harder is the belief it gives Arsenal to win the last nine if they beat City. I think it's not so much that City can't win the last nine. It's that at that point, if Arsenal beat us, my fear is they could be perfect, because my fear is they look at that game and they go, well, if we go to the Etihad and win, we can win every single one of our remaining fixtures. And I've no doubt that if it comes to it, they'll put more priority on the league than they will on the Champions League. Absolutely. I think I've kind of seen that already. Their intensity is different in the Prem than it has been in the Champions League. They were lucky against Porto, to be honest. I think they could have been losing the tie that they ended up getting through on. So, yeah, I mean, it's just so hard to call.
I know what you're saying. I just think with the way that our fixtures have been set out for the end of the season, the scheduling, the fact that we're still in all comps at the moment, I would really struggle to see.
So you think? So you're looking at it in a vacuum. So you think that Liverpool over 7 days can go to United, to Everton and to Villa and win all three games?
I think they could do that, yeah.
But then I think the City, then any combination of games that you give me in the Prem for City of what's left, I think we can do that as well.
Yeah, I think it's what you said before, though. It's not just in the round, it's about how it's not just City, it's how it affects the rivals, so Arsenal, Liverpool. And I think if we were to lose, it's just that would just completely empower Arsenal, I think. And defensively, they have been the best team in the league this season. There's no way of arguing with that. I think to go to our place and beat us, I wouldn't concede the title, but I think it would pretty much be over realistically, percentage wise.
So, if Arsenal win, then you think they're favourites, right? Because you said before that if Arsenal win, you think Liverpool will win it?
No, I think it would be very tight between the two, but I think Liverpool wouldn't put the shits up them like City winning on Sunday would.
See, I think they could outdo
Liverpool in nine games with Klopp going. Liverpool have obviously got a problem with City. I think if we were to win, I mean, that's just, it's, if we win, it's such, it puts them in such a difficult place. I think they then really will look at it and go, we almost have to be perfect to win from here.
Yeah, I think that's what they're fearful of, the City win. Right, well, let's look forward to Sunday. George, how much stronger at Arsenal this season than last season for you?
Much stronger as a unit. I think they have matured a bit from last season when, you know, I couldn't really believe how emotional they were every game on the pitch. And then when things wouldn't go their way, throwing the toys out the pram, they still are doing a lot of that. But I feel like the players, especially some of the younger players, have matured into that a bit. And defensively, they've been superb this year. And that's with quite a few injuries as well. But they've just had that in the business end, you know, the last few months. They've had that Gabriel and Saliba partnership has been superb. Ben White as well has had a terrific season, I think. So they've had those three fit most of the time. Then they've kind of had a rotating cast of, well, Timber played the first game and then obviously he's been injured ever since. And then it's been Tomiyasu, he got injured, then Kiwior and also Zinchenko. So whoever comes into that left back slot hasn't really changed the way they play, which is a good statement on how they're set up as a team. And the addition is Rice has been magnificent for them. I think, you know, he's a terrific player. I think he's a terrific leader, and it's given a bit more freedom to the likes of Ødegaard in the middle of the park to get forward more and be involved in the final third. So I think they're a stronger prospect, but I don't think they're a perfect team or an unbeatable team. I think there's flaws still there. I think, in the forward line this season, which I would say the forward line was one of the most impressive parts of their unit last year. All the goals Martinelli was getting, Saka and stuff. Whereas this year, I think it's maybe it's been the weaker part of their team. So I think if you can contain Saka and then either a Havertz, whoever's playing through the middle, or a Jesus, or, well, on the left wing this weekend, it's highly likely to be Trossard. I don't think that's something that you should be fearful of. And I think it's something that you should try to suffocate and put more pressure on the rest of the team. And then you could be able to break through them a bit more. But it's interesting how they've flipped kind of their strengths this season. But I think overall, they still are a little stronger.
Lloyd, do you think, from City's point of view, do you think we have to be more fearful of Arsenal on the ball or Arsenal off the ball?
I think the latter.
Mm.
And I think particularly because we're going to be missing Stones and latterly Walker. So Pep has literally just confirmed they're both out in his press conference. So I think no Stones for us is a problem. He's been, I think, one of the key players in those two games last season. He helps us kind of get out of their really intense press, which I think Havertz is actually a key part of, as much as there's a lot of, I think, justifiable criticism of his play on the ball. Technically, I think he's actually quite poor. He's really good off the ball, as is Odegaard, and they press probably the best in the league this season. So I think that's where I'm worried. I'm worried about Diaz coughing the ball up, you know, in our kind of our own third. So I would say, yeah, the biggest threat would be their press and kind of out of possession play at the weekend.
Mm.
Yeah, I think I agree with that. I think that part of what we need to handle will really be just their press and how they work off the ball. George, we went long against Arsenal last season and it was quite effective in the end. Can you see a world in which at the Etihad on Sunday, particularly with the injuries that we've got, that Guardiola decides, rather than sort of playing into Arsenal's hands, that you just sort of blam it long for Haaland and KDB on the knockdowns and almost not give anything away cheaply in the first half?
I think it may be an avenue they go down if we feel like our build-up's not working, but I feel it will be slightly less effective as it was last season, especially if they play Kiwior at left-back, who, you know, was a centre-back himself, stepping out to left-back, who's fairly big and great in the duels. And then Saliba is playing instead of Holding this year. And obviously Haaland had a field day with Rob Holding last year at the Etihad. And I don't think he'll have as much joy with Saliba. You know, Saliba's had a terrific season and as an athlete, he's superb. So I don't think it's something that we can rely on as a get out of jail free if our build-up isn't working. I think we'll need a combination of the two this year. And I think the fact they are playing bigger bodies at the back means that maybe we will have more joy creating chances on the deck in the final third than we did last year. So I think a combination of the two tactics is needed. I don't think in this game we can rely on one avenue. I think we have to be slightly moldable.
Lloyd, this is
well,
the biggest
do we think,
test.
Do we, go on. Just on that though, do we think Edison's going to play? Because I think he's a key part to that tactic if you want to go for it.
I think
yeah,
he will.
I think he could. I've just seen that Guardiola saying that he's much better, so I think he will probably play. But I also have faith in Ortega. I mean, in terms of going long, he's so accurate, Ortega, with his long balls. It's slightly different in the build-up with pressure. I don't think he's quite as good as Edison in that degree in his own box and with, like, you know, three rapid forwards running at him. But I think Ortega does allow us to play in our build-up in the kind of the usual way and also go long. But I think hopefully Edison will play, and I think that means we'll just build up as we usually do.
Lloyd, is this a bigger test for Arsenal or City?
I think you could make an argument for both, to be honest. You know, this obviously down the years and where we've been before, it's a much bigger test for Arsenal, but our record in big games this season has been pretty poor. At home, we've not got the job done. I don't think we've really clicked into gear yet this season, and we're all kind of waiting for it. So I think you could make the case that for both, to be honest. I think, you know, there's a lot riding on this game for City as well as there is for Arsenal. Last season, this game was all about Arsenal, wasn't it? Mm-hmm. And could they stand up to it? And they couldn't. This season, I think there's a lot of, you know, justifiable question marks around us as well.
Yeah, I think it's a bigger test for City. I genuinely do. I think the interesting thing is that, I think I said this on a previous pod, that for me, it's not that we haven't hit top gear. It's that we're just not as good as we were last season. I think we have to accept the kind of season on season ebb and flow of a football team. You can be less good if you lose a couple of players and they don't get replaced in the right fashion, and then you have a big injury. And I think the combination of Gundo Mahrez leaving and then KDB and Stones effectively being out for almost the entirety of the season, we're just not as good a team. Do you know what I mean? And so I think that coming into this period here, I don't suddenly expect a switch to be flicked and we suddenly become the team that we were in the run-in last season. But that doesn't mean we can't win games. I think, you know, there's loads of ways that you can win a game of football. The question, and that's why I think it's a bigger test for City, the question is, how do we beat Arsenal on Sunday? What tactically, what's the system that Guardiola employs? Which players turn up on the day and decide that they want to win or lose the game for City? Kind of want to begin to bring this round to looking at a team. So, Lloyd, I'm going to stay with you. So, if Akanji, KDB and Grealish are all fit to start, what's the team that you'd like to see Pep pick?
I think you'd definitely start the first two. I think Grealish, in full throttle, obviously plays this game, but even if he's, quote, fit for the game on Sunday, I'd have question marks about how up to speed he is, to be honest. So I think it really comes down to, for me, the team, whether he wants to play Kovacic or not at the weekend. And I think the absence of Stones definitely increases that quite a lot, I would say. And so for me, it's probably a choice between Kovacic or one of Grealish, Doku, in when it comes to the starting 11. I think the back four probably picks itself, which is Akanji, Diaz, Ake and Gvardiol. Although I do think there's a possibility that everyone seems to be ruling out that maybe Rico Lewis plays instead of Gvardiol and we play Ake at left back against Saka and kind of Rico pushes in. But I would have question marks around starting Grealish against Arsenal this weekend, to be honest, just mainly because I'm not sure he's got the legs and the games within him over the last few weeks.
George, I think the Doku, Kovacic, Grealish conversation is a really interesting one. Where do you land on the best way through Arsenal on Sunday? Like, so I guess if you take the point of view that Kovacic is a step back in terms of being a bit more solid and Doku is a step forward in terms of being, well, we're just going to score more goals than you, which side of the fence would you prefer Guardiola to land on?
It's an interesting one, because can you see a world where both of those players play and we see front three of Doku on the left, Haaland through the middle, maybe Bernardo on the right, and then Rodri, Phil and Kovacic in the middle? It's something I can see. I don't know if he will go for that. Yeah, De Bruyne.
Just left De Bruyne out.
But it just...
I don't see how both Kovacic and Doku start. I think you'd have to leave De Bruyne out, which maybe if he's not fit enough, they'll do. But they'll want De Bruyne to play this game. I mean, it's blindingly obvious. Yeah. I've sat down this morning and drawn out potential teams. I don't think there's a way you can play both Kovacic and Doku for me.
No, not without Bernardo missing out. I think
you'd have to drop Bernardo.
The only way to do that, and I do it. I mean, I'm gonna rock the boat here. Like, if you're saying to me, what should we lean into on Sunday? Look, we have to be honest with ourselves. We haven't been defensively stable this season. We just haven't. It's that simple. And so I think that notionally, going into a game like Sunday at home, what you do is you back your big goal scorers, your big creative players to go and win the game. And so I can see an argument for sticking Phil on the right, Doku on the left, Haaland through the middle, and then playing a midfield three of basically playing Rodri and Kovacic as a two and sticking KDB in front of them. And yeah, having the option of Bernardo from the bench later on. I think the good-ish thing is that we will have options from the bench regardless of what happens, because I think Grealish has trained during the international break, so at the very least he'll be on the bench, which I think having a bench make a big difference.
We'll have attacking changes, but we might struggle to cover another defensive injury if someone went down in game.
Yeah, but I mean, defenders don't get subbed unless they're injured. Do you know what I mean? I'm not really focusing on, well, if Akanji gets a knock, then, well, we got Rico Lewis. He can cover both the fullback positions. So we have somebody. It's true we've not got, we won't have a central option if one of the centre-backs get injured, but that sort of is what it is. I think when I talk about subs, really, I'm talking about game changers. Like, if it's nil-nil on 20, do you go for it, Lloyd?
I think we need to score first and just put the fear of God in them. I'd be going for it from minute one, to be honest. I wouldn't.
No, but I mean,
tactically,
I see what you're saying, but what the question I'm asking you is, let's say that there's 20 to go and it's nil nil, and the 11 that you put on the pitch have thrown everything at them. You know, there's going to be an attacking change that you can make, if not two.
Yeah. I would not. You cannot settle for the point in this game. You've got to go and beat them. It's not just about the points. It's about the mentality. I appreciate taking the risk means that you might lose 1-0, but come on, we're City. Guardiola's the manager. I'd be very disappointed if we kind of tried to play out for a 0-0 from there. You absolutely have to go for it, and I'd rather we went for it and we ended up losing than we don't go for it at all.
Really? So, because for you, we're out of it with a draw.
We've got to win the game. We've absolutely got to win the game. People have been saying that draw is not the end of the world. I kind of think it is. It's our last opportunity to take points off one of the two rivals in the title races. We've drawn far too many games.
Yeah, but with the best will in the world, right? The worst case scenario from a draw is that we're 3 points behind Liverpool and a point behind Arsenal. It's still one result. I mean,
it is, but we need to see this City team click into gear this season. This game is all about that.
But we don't have another gear. That's what I'm trying to say to you. We have what we have. We don't. The team isn't as good as it was last season. There's
of
no
course,
point.
But this team can still. I don't think we've seen the best of this team yet this season. And I think that needs to come if we're going to win the league from here. For me, I think we've got to see it now, and I think it has to happen on Sunday.
George, yeah. where do you land?
I would like to see us go for it as well. I think it would set the tone really for the rest of the running. And I also think the way Arsenal will set up is, I think they're going to go for it big time from the start. But then as the game goes on, if it's still nil-nil, I can see them at, say, if there's 20 minutes to go, nil-nil, I can see Arsenal starting to maybe retreat slightly and just trying to play on the break. Because I think if they can come to the Etihad and not lose, at the end of the day, if they were under the cosh, I think they'd take that. So I think in those kind of moments, I think we've got to kind of put the sword to them and stake a claim to, you know, saying that this is, we mean business now and everybody else needs to watch out. And I think we should really go for it. But as you say, Asan, will that make us go up a gear, or are we already at where we're at? And we've seen a lot of times this year, say if we did go 1-0 up early, Guardiola's happy with a lead of one goal. I don't see us putting the sword to them in the same way we did last season with putting four past them, 4-1 or anything like that. I think
Guardiola would be very... If you've got a lead versus it being 0-0, that's a different situation.
But I think even with a lead, I would be worried in a big game now with the way we're playing the season. 1-0, we've seen us throw it away in a few times. I think we need to go a couple of goals up against these if we're going to win the match, because I don't know how a 1-0 wins it. We've thrown points away in silly situations against much lesser sides. So I think we really need to go for this one on Sunday and give it everything, if you know, and then face the consequence if it goes the other way, but I think we've just got to go for it.
Do you agree with Lloyd that a draw, that it's a must-win game? Let me rephrase it. Do you think it's a must-win game?
Yeah, I do. I think it is a must-win. I think you can, just because of a psychology perspective, and I think you could win this, and then if you lost another, maybe you could still win it, and you could rally.
Agreed.
But I think this one, especially then if Liverpool have won at the weekend and we lose, and then you're 4 points behind both of them from the jump with 9 games to go, then you need 2 teams to drop points in 2 games, which is a much bigger ask of needing like 1 team to drop points in 1 game. Just on a looking at it fairly logically and removing the kind of emotions and the tangibles from it. So I would say it's a must win.
Okay. Nervous?
You don't think
then?
It is then?
No, I mean, I don't. I don't think that Liverpool will be perfect. I don't think that's likely. I think that I'd love to win the game, but I'm not going to be sat here on the review on Monday crying if we draw it, for sure. I'm not going to be crying if we draw it. I think a defeat is different. I think if we lose, we're out of that conversation. I was going to ask this earlier, but I'll ask you both now. Like, Lloyd, if you remember when we lost to Villa, did you still think back then that we'd be in the title race now, looking at how the team were?
I thought we could be, yeah. I think we were really struggling with unavailability at that point, weren't we? Because the midfield was Stones, Lewis, I think, wasn't it? In midfield, and Kovacic against Villa. Rodri was suspended. KDB was out. So a lot of our troubles felt down to kind of unavailability at that point. But I didn't see Arsenal kind of going on this run that they had this season. I genuinely didn't think that would happen. And I didn't think Liverpool would pull together as many draws as they've as many wins as they've managed. They've shithoused so many late goals this season and got through some really tough injury troubles, haven't they, to be where they are at the moment. So I didn't see those two things happening. So I did actually think, yeah, that we would probably still be in and around it at this point.
That Villa team was Walker, Diaz, Gvardiol, Stones, Akanji, Bernardo, Rico, Alvarez, Foden, Haaland. So Kovacic didn't play in that game.
Ah, there we go. Yeah, so it was Rico and Stonesy then in midfield. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, I mean, that's not good, is it?
Yeah. George, what about for you? Where do you land on where we find ourselves this season? I feel as though there's a lot of disappointment around somehow. And yeah, at the same time, I'm kind of looking at it going, well, I'm not sure there's, you know, short of running away with it, yeah, I'm not sure there's a lot else you can ask for. Like, a point off the top, I guess. Or 2 points off the top, or no, a point off the top. I mean, it just doesn't feel to me like you can ask for much more in the quarterfinals of the Champions League, into the semis of the FA Cup.
Yeah. It's kind of strange that, like, how the season's unfolded and everybody's views around it, because we're on for the treble again. That's the, in black and white, that's, we can still win the treble, but it does not feel the same as it did last season when we were on for the treble. Obviously, we're in a different world now. We've won the Champions League, we have won the treble, so things feel different. And the highs of last season were so high that maybe, you know, the come down and the hangover that the fan base is experiencing from that is making that things seem a bit clouded. But, you know, would I be disappointed if we don't win the league from here? Yes. But would I be absolutely wounded? No. I think especially if we're still in the FA Cup and the Champions League. If you said to me now, would you guarantee? Here's a question right now. So we've got a very, you know, close title race. Would you accept now, shake hands on winning the FA Cup and the Champions League, but not winning the league?
I know what Aeson's going to say.
No. No, I wouldn't shake hands on that. No.
Fairs.
No. I want 4 in a row.
Yeah.
I want 4 titles in a row. I want that. That's its own piece of history, and I want it. Lloyd, would you? What about you?
Well, for me, the Premier League is the hardest competition of the three for us to win this season. I know that sounds mad because the Champions League is a knockout, but we've got such pedigree in that competition. I don't think there's really anyone that puts the fear of God in me. So I think reluctantly I would also say no, I'd really, really want to win the Prem this season. I think it would be another ridiculous achievement because of how good the other two have been.
I agree. Right. That was our epic Friday show. Normally, I'd say give me a score prediction, but just kind of feel like it's, yeah. I'm not sure this weekend is the weekend for score predictions. George, will we beat Arsenal on Sunday? It's a much simpler question.
Yes.
Lloyd, will we beat Arsenal on Sunday?
Whoa, I don't know, man. I'm not mega confident, I'll be honest. We could definitely do it, but I haven't seen it this season. So I'm going to say no. I think it might be a draw.
Okay, fair enough. I think we'll edge it by a goal in the end. I think home, the fact that we're at home is probably what ends up deciding it. Right, gentlemen, I thoroughly enjoyed that. George, thank you very much.
No, yeah, appreciate it. Thanks for having me on as usual.
Lloyd, cheers. Thank you very much, mate.
Top man.
Everybody who listened, this was the Friday show. If you're not a member of the 93-20 player, head over to our website. Check it out. Check out the previews on SoundCloud. In the meantime, be safe, be well, and as always, up the Blues.